We will return to this recording for Music of Chopin later in the hour, but spotlighting the cello as we begin this 10 o'clock hour on this Wednesday morning. Welcoming in Jamie Feist, the professor of cello, Central Michigan University School of Music, as he and colleagues all get set for welcoming in students tomorrow for the String Day hosted by the CMU School of Music, and that will include the guest artists, the Elias String Quartet. They will be a part of master classes and also a concert tomorrow night at the Staples Family Concert Hall, works of Sally Beamish and Beethoven on their program. Jamie, good to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me in, David.
The concept of String Day, I know we have talked with other music faculty folks along the way as we have these periodic days, as it were, in a category obviously used as a recruiting tool to try and showcase the offerings and opportunities of the CMU School of Music for the young people across the state. I understand this is open through the events tomorrow, grades 7 through 12.
Yes.
Do we find, and knowing that we still have band programs, but I wonder about the health and the availability of string orchestra programs or string opportunities for younger players. We've seen so much, sadly, of reduction in funding to provide these opportunities in the arts for young people. Compare it, I guess, to when you were coming up as a young player in terms of the opportunities you had versus what you're seeing now across the areas here in Michigan that CMU is trying to recruit from.
Yeah, so that's a really good question, and it's a really good topic to talk about. Now, I grew up in the Milwaukee area, so I was very fortunate in that there were a lot of opportunities there. I grew up in a suburb of Milwaukee that had a strong string program. We had a very good youth orchestra program. There was the Fine Arts String Quartet, was in residence at that time at UWM, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. We had a very good symphony orchestra. I grew up watching Leonard Skirmerhorn conduct the Milwaukee Symphony, then after him, Lucas Foss.
Yes.
We had Stephen Doan for a while as principal cellist of the Milwaukee Symphony. He's now at Eastman. He's been there a long time, very famous cellist. Lauren Brown was principal cellist for a while. He's now in the section for the Chicago Symphony. I grew up listening to their performance. I grew up going to the Fine Arts Quartet, the hearing cello recitals by these really good cellists, hearing a really good orchestra and so on. But, I mean, that's kind of fortunate, I think. And that, I guess that goes with being in a larger city. And basically, I think, generally speaking, in the state of Michigan, it's probably true elsewhere, if you live in a more rural area, it's far less likely you're going to have a string program. Like I would say between here and going up to Traverse City, I think there's only one in Cadillac, one program, until you get to Traverse City, and then you have a couple programs up there. And then going south, there's between here and Lansing, you have Greenville and St. John's, and that would be it. So they tend to be clustered a little more around Grand Rapids, Lansing, Ann Arbor, Detroit areas. And then in between, we also have, there's a program in Saginaw. And of course, we have one in town here. So yeah, I think if you live in a rural area, there aren't that many. We've got 100, to my count, looking at the Michigan School Band and Orchestra Association, we have 122 high school programs. That sounds like a lot. But we have, and I don't mean to like pit strings against band or anything, but to my count, there are 857 band programs in the state of Michigan. We have 122 string programs. So that's, and there are some very good opportunities, you know, for strings if they're in these programs. Many of them are very strong. Many of them had cutbacks after the Great Recession that I don't think they've recovered from yet. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of maybe just an overview of the situation.
The funding then to support the programs or the availability of being able to have the instruments available mm-hmm. for the students to try on, explore, and begin those pursuits? What do you think is the leading factor when it comes to lesser opportunities in mm-hmm. some of these more rural areas of the state?
I mean, I think it's, you know, funds. I think you're more likely to see bands programs simply because of sports. And so, and that's valid. I mean, that's affecting a lot of number-wise. It's the sports programs involve, you know, quite a number of kids today. So they're influenced them by the music, and or influenced by the music. I mean, that they're touched in that way. So that's probably a big part of it. If they have to choose, you know, what number of kids are the most affected? Well, I guess it would be sports, right? And so the marching band. So the strings, and again, I don't mean to pit anything against band, but it's just kind of the reality of it, right? There are just fewer string programs in rural areas. I mean,
and
just
at the same
very
time,
few.
Yeah, at the same time, there would be an advantage, I would think, for some of the young people in terms of being exposed just because of the access to music in general. You can get so many things online and go mm-hmm. out and explore and find so many things that some of these young people may end up finding string artists, a quartet, a soloist, an orchestra, and begin to gravitate to that because they're able to discover these things on their own, even if those opportunities aren't there. The challenge then, of course, of mom and dad getting them to lessons across many miles and things like that. But whereas you had, as you said, the exposure right there, but at least now they can pick up and find almost anything mm-hmm. Online when it comes to being exposed to different types of music.
That's true. They can at least be exposed to it, hopefully, you know, if they come across it. And it could pique their interest. And I would say that would then be a sad thing if they couldn't do anything about their interest because there's no program. I mean, let's face it, there just aren't that many private teachers in rural areas, you know, for strings. And so an orchestra program at the school for many of them would probably be the only way for them to get some learning experience on those instruments. So I guess since we're, you know, talking about this, there's some really great opportunities there, too. I mean, for classical musicians, I guess we have to do a little bit of missionary work for string playing, huh?
A noble cause, as it were, to spread the word as much as we can.
Yes.
Jamie Feist is professor of cello, Central Michigan University School of Music. He and colleagues in the string faculty welcoming in a number of young players across the state. Who are interested in violin, viola, cello, and a double bass, getting a chance to be exposed to orchestral music and chamber music for CMU String Day 2020. This happens tomorrow, February the 20th, and an all-day event. And part of that will be welcoming in the guest artists, the Elias String Quartet. They will be on hand for master classes and other engagement opportunities, and then giving a concert tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Staples Family Concert Hall in the CMU School of Music. Works of Beethoven and also that of Sally Beamish on their program tomorrow. Who was, or maybe it was a collaborative effort in terms of coming along the artistry of the Elias String Quartet, who had the first contact with them to pursue bringing them in as guest mm-hmm. artists? Were they a group that you had worked with or one of your colleagues had worked with before? How did we get the opportunity to welcome them here?
Well, we have a committee in the School of Music that looks into these sorts of things, and they too do take recommendations. This particular group was not recommended by the string area. That doesn't mean that that's anything bad at all. In fact, this is great that they're coming. I think that the committee, someone on the committee had found them, as you were talking about YouTube, and the availability of finding groups. And so I'm not totally sure of the details, other than it. I think it originated within the committee that makes these sorts of plans. So it's a great find. You know, they're a great quartet and very energetic. Their recordings sound great. Their performances are great. I think Their program is very interesting. They have an early Beethoven and a late Beethoven quartet. And they also have a piece by Sally Beamish, a female composer who's British. The quartet's out of England, too. And she's written this piece, and I think maybe you talked about it with the cellist other day, but Reed Stanzas. And she says here that the second violinist in Elias is known as a traditional Scottish fiddle player. So she works in a lot of Scottish fiddling into the piece. So sometimes when we say modern work, you know, sometimes that means it's more dissonant or experimental. This one seems like it's going to have a genre of music that would have a strong appeal to the general public. Although I confess I haven't heard it yet. I only read about it, you know, so I'm very interested to hear it myself. So I would encourage people to come to take a listen to the new piece and get an interesting perspective on Beethoven's early string quartet, Opus 18, number 5, and his string quartet, number 15, Opus, 132, I believe.
And she was talking, Marie Bitlock, the cellist with the Elias String Quartet, about their emphasis on a lot of works. And we're finding this in talking with a lot of folks. And I suppose it would be a fair question for any of you within the School of Music, too, about an emphasis or a focus towards the music of Beethoven in this 250th birthday celebratory year, and the interesting contrast between the early and the late work by Beethoven. Is it something that you're using as any kind of a framework to focus in on with your students in the cello studio to explore some of these works by Beethoven through the course of the year?
Yeah. Well, I teach symphonic lit, and we just a few classes ago, we had our Beethoven class. You know, we went over his works, and they just had a big Beethoven quiz. I guess that you could say that was an honor of this anniversary. And so it's being discussed, and the Beethoven sonatas are part of the standard literature for cellists. So I do have one student playing his second sonata. He's doing a very good job at that. Beethoven to me, represents somebody whose music was such a huge outgrowth of who he was as a person. You know, he spent a lot of his life in isolation. You know, it's well known that his father was physically abusive, so I imagine as a child he spent a lot of time in isolation. Then as he grew older, he started to show signs of hearing loss, eventually going completely deaf or nearly completely deaf. I think it's not sure if he could still hear a little bit. But he talks about in his Heiligenstadt Testament, if some of the listeners have heard of this, it was a letter to his brothers that was found in his desk at the time of his death. And basically, he talks about the isolation he felt as he was losing his hearing because he didn't want anyone to know about it. You know, he thought this was an embarrassing thing that a composer, a musician, can't hear. So he tried to hide it, right? And so he would avoid certain social functions, and people interpreted it wrongly, you know? So he withdrew from social situations. He felt isolated because he felt misunderstood. A lot of his life he spent, you know, isolated. And I think that, you know, this played an important role in just who he was and the sort of music that came out of him, you know, because he really took music and made it into something very, very personal. There's a quote in the textbook that I had when I was in my first semester of music history when I was a freshman. And David Hughes is the author of this overview of history, and he said, Beethoven's not just concerned with expression, he's concerned with confession. He's confessing who he is as a person. And you really see that switch after this Heiligenstadt Testament, which he never gave to his brothers, as far as I know, where he talks about he was on the verge, he was despairing, he was on the verge of suicide, But it was his art, his music that saved him. And, you know, we talked about the importance of art with kids having this opportunity. I mean, it's such a great opportunity for students to be playing an instrument, being involved in music. It really does give them a very important outlet, you know, for what they may be feeling. That's right. It's a lot of what art is. So anyway, there's kind of a quick overview. He came of age during the French Revolution, you know, the sense of personal and political empowerment you hear coming through in his music, is that temperament, all sorts of things. But now I'm sort of talking. I went into my professor mode, didn't I?
Do the young people come, I would think, obviously, with a familiarity, certainly more than a working acquaintance of a composer like a Beethoven or a Mozart or a Bach. Do you find when you talk about this this stylistic growth, especially through the early to late works of Beethoven, are the students gravitating to hear then the roots of what came out of him to what is being done with contemporary music today? Do they find, do they start to pick up on, name the contemporary piece, fill in the blank, that they can hear where maybe some of those roots of what that piece is today being able to be traced back to the early masters?
Well, I like to talk about that in my classes. You know, what's interesting is the connection between, well, let's speak of the 20th century for now. So the really modern composers, that high modern period in the mid-20th century, they had this, I think, strong sense of their history and the tradition to which they belonged, even though there was, in a sense, they were breaking away in the sense of breaking new ground, yet still a strong sense of where they came from. And I think Schoenberg really set the tone for that at the beginning of the 20th century, the 12-tone composer that a lot of the public finds very challenging to listen to, very dissonant works. But if you read Schoenberg, he talks a lot about, he analyzed and thoroughly knew the works of previous composers. There's a big, you know, lineage, really, from all these. You can trace these composers, even the most avant-garde ones. You can still trace them back through Beethoven and go back even further. At least I think so. And, yes, so Beethoven, you know, at the end of his life, he wrote, you know, his Große Fugue, his second to last string quartet. And, you know, there's something of the avant-garde spirit in him, in his late works. Just like Art of the Fugue by Bach and so on, where they're just letting their creative imagination just go. They're just becoming, it wasn't music necessarily designed to appeal to the broadest group of people that they could. It wasn't a big net, and his late quartets, Beethoven's late quartets, were roundly condemned, you know, by the critics in his late life, now considered some of his greatest works. There weren't that many people appreciating the late works of Bach. You know, you had C.P. Bach, his son, basically kept this sort of following of Bach nerds in Berlin, you know, after his father had died, that studied his scores and so on. But generally it was kind of complex for the average person. And so I think that's where the avant-garde, you know, picked up a lot of their cues from composers like that, works like that. You know, it's kind of an art for art's sake. So you do hear a complexity in the late Beethoven works. You know, he basically reinvented himself as an artist twice. Once after the Heiligenstadt Testament, in which the music becomes much more personal, and that's when you really start pulling things towards the Romantic period, and then his late works, where they become very intellectual, very complex, but they're wonderful, you know. They're amazing. And this is a really interesting way, this concert, where you can hear an early Beethoven quartet where there's still that strong stamp of Haydn and Mozart, and then you get to hear what he's doing at the end of his life. And so it's a really neat comparison. I think so. And goes well with the piece by Sally Beamish, too.
Framing that contemporary piece are those two works by Beethoven with members of the Elias String Quartet, guest artists of String Day 2020, which is tomorrow on the campus of Central Michigan University and the School of Music. The youngsters who are interested in violin, viola, cello, and bass, grades 7 through 12, also string alumni returning for the event, and the orchestra teachers all having a chance to explore not only with each other, but with the members of the Elias String Quartet, the modern repertoire, and studying the great master of Beethoven through the course of the day. Master classes, other engagement activities, and the concert tomorrow night at 7:30, Staples Family Concert Hall. That is open to the public. That is in the music building, and the members of the Elias String Quartet as guest artists of String Day 2020. Lots of busy things then for you and your colleagues yet today and certainly through the day tomorrow. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us, giving us a preview, and we will continue to carry the flag and wave the flag for the orchestra programs and the string programs, hoping that those opportunities will be there for the young people as we move forward. A real pleasure having you in studio with us today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for all you do, and thank you for having me.
Jamie Fye is professor of cello, Central Michigan University's School of Music, and he and colleagues are preparing for String Day 2020 tomorrow on the campus of CMU.